Developing clairvoyance with phosphenism. The exercise of concentrating on the detail of the phosphene. This exercise is different from phosphenic mixing, as you will not have to prepare a thought in advance, nor to maintain a precise thought during the exercise. Those of you who have already experimented with the post-phosphine have noticed that it's not homogeneous. Apart from the changes of colors that we have mentioned, you have certainly noticed dots, moving shadows, or sparks that go through this phosphine. The experiment now consists in the following. You are going to focus all your attention on one of those details, a dot, the angle of a moving shadow, a spark, etc. As soon as this detail has disappeared, in the same region of the phosphine, seek again another detail, and so on until the phosphine disappears. If you keep looking for a detail all the time, lines and forms that conjure ideas of objects that you know form in the zone around your search. Naturally, the phenomenon gets more intense with practice, and you will have to do this experiment during several consecutive phosphenes. After the experiment, write down the images that have appeared, even if it's only vague shapes. Often, those shapes will curiously remind you of good resolutions that you have taken but never carried out. Before these kind of shapes, geometrical shapes can appear. Very often, they appear during the experiment of concentrating on the detail of the phosphine. So, concentrating all your attention on the detail of the phosphine has triggered the diffusion of the energy of the phosphine in the second zone of the cuneus. Let me remind you that if you stimulate electrically the second zone of the cuneus, phosphenes with geometrical shapes appear. It is thus this zone of the brain that is stimulated by this exercise. If you insist on this exercise, the diffusion of the energy goes further. The shapes that appear then are related to good resolutions that you have taken but never carried out. Here is a simple example. One evening, at around 8 o'clock, a man who was practicing with the phosphenes with me told me, "Oh, I can see a loaf of bread in the phosphine." This reminded him that very morning, his wife had asked him to bring back a loaf of bread, and he had forgotten. Another time, another person saw a butterfly appear. This reminded him that, at a certain time of his life, he had the desire to study butterflies and insects. Though he had the possibility to do it, he never got around to it. This process is a sort of psychoanalysis, but it is opposed to the psychoanalysis of Freud. It is not a psychoanalysis of the lowest parts of the personality. It is a psychoanalysis of its higher parts. This is another example of the very curious connection between phosphenism and the spirit of initiative. Concentrating on the detail of the visual chaos. This exercise is similar to the previous one. The visual chaos is all the vague lights and colors that remain when you close your eyes in the dark. Your field of vision is never entirely black. It is agitated by vague shapes and colors. These lights are another category of phosphenes, as phosphine means subjective sensation of light. Certain authors call the visual chaos residual images. They are these small luminous patches that dance in front of your eyes, and those relatively precise but very brief sparks that appear sometimes. We are going to proceed in a way that is quite similar to the previous exercise. We are going to focus all our attention on one of these small details. Then, when it has disappeared, we will focus our attention on another detail, and so on. If you insist on this exercise, you will realize that it helps achieving a state of mental emptiness. Moreover, a greater brightness appears in the zone where you are looking for details. Within this brightness, when you try to focus your attention on the detail of the visual chaos, a certain motion starts to appear. If you focus your attention on the mass of light rather than on a simple single detail, the phenomenon will stop. It is very important to understand that whatever appears, you have to look for a detail within that image. Some persons, for instance, describe wave movements that appear within this brightness. Other persons describe a shiny colors. Other ones perceive a small lightning bolt. If you perceive a tiny lightning bolt, you have to focus your attention straight away on an angle of this bolt. If you keep practicing like this, the brightness will acquire a certain volume. You will have the impression that there is a little cloud in front of you. If you keep persevering in searching for details, the brightness will suddenly transform itself into a vision. These visions are often prophetic. They realize themselves a few days later or correspond to an event that was taking place at that moment somewhere else. I met a clairvoyant and I verified her ability. She had never precisely analyzed this phenomenon. When she was a child, she was left in bed a long time in the morning, in the dark room. As a game, she would search for small details that appeared in her visual chaos. Of course, she did not know that it was called the visual chaos. She realized that this triggered visions and that these visions would take place. She was clever enough to develop this and obtain a certain gift of clairvoyance. I have been able to verify that all images that appear through this process are clairvoyant images. This experiment has more chances to succeed if, for instance, during 2 or 3 days, you do phosphenes with the sun or lamps during the day, and if you stimulate your phosphenic function. At night, if you wake up in half sleep, you will always have a richer visual chaos if you have stimulated your phosphenic function the previous days. It will be easier for you to have visions, as in half sleep you are closer to the world of dreams. Bergson was the first to notice that certain dreams are provoked by the spontaneous phosphenes of the visual chaos. I verified this myself. It is not very easy, but you can try the experiment. You have to sleep in a very dark room, and if you wake up just after a dream, do not open your eyes, but focus your attention on the small, bright patches that dance in the visual chaos. I have observed that the main object of the dream resembled a lot these spontaneous phosphine, this bright patch that was moving in my visual chaos. Bergson is certainly right. As we have seen that phosphinism is connected to divination, it is not surprising that it can trigger prophetic dreams. There is a way to increase the intensity of this visual chaos. Increasing the visual chaos through sensory isolation in a flotation tank. There are many flotation tanks across the world, and they are a perfect environment for intensifying your visual chaos. Experiments like the one I mentioned previously have much more chance to succeed in these conditions. The phosphenes, the only light that the fetus can perceive. The concept of sensory isolation in flotation tanks can lead to an interesting idea. You know that I have mentioned that the younger a subject starts practicing phosphinism, the more chances there are to develop higher mental gifts. And you might have heard about the works of Dr. Alfred Tomatis. He studied the sounds that the fetus hears within his or her mother, and has come to the conclusion that the fetus within the mother is in a state that is equivalent to a flotation tank or a chamber of sensory isolation. Consequently, the fetus must have a very important visual chaos. This is why children love to practice phosphinism, as it reminds them to their life within their mother. The telepathic transmission of phosphenic phenomena. One of my collaborators, Raoul Delay, conducted very precise experiments of phosphenic telepathy in South America. He has discovered that it is very easy to transmit phosphenes by telepathy. He asked a subject to focus on a red circle on a white background, then he would take the red circle out. Through complementarity of colors, the subject sees a green circle appear. This circle is also a phosphine. Next to this subject, there was another subject, the receiver. He was wearing an eye patch. The receiving subject would see not the color of the disc appear, but the complementary color of the phosphine that the emitting subject was perceiving. It is interesting to note that this complementary color was perceived with more intensity when the two subjects were very close to each other. It seems that distance plays a role in the transmission of phosphenes by telepathy. In Fatima, Portugal, in 1917, during the solar prodigy, 70,000 people started to focus on the sun suddenly while praying. The rhythm of the phosphenes got carried away by telepathic resonance, and the telepathic influence was gigantic. A case of clairvoyance developed by instinctive use. I have demonstrated in my book, Developing Clairvoyance with Phosphenism, that the regular practice of phosphenic mixing leads to the development of clairvoyance. Personally, I do not believe that clairvoyance is a gift that is obtained at birth. In all the cases that I have studied, there was something in the past of that person during their childhood that was connected to the unconscious practice of phosphenism. I also met a lady, Madame Giski, whose gift of clairvoyance I have verified. She mentioned precise names and events that I had never told her about. When she was a child, her family used to argue a lot. To feel better, she would go to church to pray. But she only prayed while she was focusing on the lamp and that she could see colors appear in her field of vision. She used to wait for the colors to appear before she started praying. Again, this is an example of how children can instinctively find the way towards phosphenic mixing. She was thus practicing mixing with the cophosphine. Also, she used to live near a canal and she would contemplate the reflection of the sun on the water of the canal. In the French Alps town of Chambéry, there was a woman who had gifts of clairvoyance. Some people I knew told me that her gift was absolutely amazing and that I should check it for myself. She told me that she started the following manner. When she was young, she used to take a picture and place it vertically in front of her. A small piece of candle was lit next to the picture. She would look at the character on the picture, focusing between the eyes of the character, and sometimes she would close her own eyes. The candle lit next to the picture would stimulate her phosphenic function. I brought pictures that she observed, and the details she mentioned proved to me that she was a genuine clairvoyant. Again, she was using the phosphenes to produce clairvoyance. Actually, all the persons who have developed the gift of clairvoyance have, at some point in their life, practiced a form of phosphenic mixing. Perceiving physical objects in the dark with the diffuse glow, final phase of the phosphine. Here is an extraordinary fact that is related to clairvoyance. The diffuse glow allows to perceive physical objects that go through it in the dark like shadows. The simplest mode of operation is the following. You will need to practice in a room as dark as possible. One of the proofs that the following phenomenon is a phenomenon of clairvoyance is that it takes place in the complete darkness. Actually, the darker the room is, the more chances the experiment will succeed. Focus on the lamp for approximately a minute. Switch the lamp off and put one or even two eye patches over your eyes. Make sure that your vision is completely blocked. Keep your eyes closed under the eye patches. During the presence of the colors, you can practice phosphenic mixing or sway your head very softly backwards and forwards to stimulate phosphenic phenomena. As soon as the diffuse glow appears around the central nucleus, start the experiment as it will reach its peak quickly and quickly fade away. Make sure you use the most favorable period of time. At that moment, first start by passing your hand vertically so that the palm of your hand is perpendicular to your forehead. Make sure your fingers are in a clear and precise open position so that you can recognize the shape of your hand. Move your hand vertically, then horizontally, then sideways, slowly at first, then quicker, and you will see a shadow that goes through the diffuse glow. if you cannot get the diffuse glow yet, it means you haven't practiced enough yet, and you will need to spend a few days or weeks training with phosphenic mixing. Usually, it only takes a few days of practice to perceive the diffuse glow. Also, as a general rule, phosphenic experiments have more chance to succeed in the morning after a good night's sleep than in the evening when you are tired. So, if this experiment failed one evening, you can try it again in the morning. Make sure you try it long before sunrise so that the conditions of darkness are optimal. Sooner or later, you will perceive the movement of your hand as a relatively precise shadow. Some people might say that this is a suggestion, as one knows that one is moving one's hand. Well, I would say, try to imagine or to suggest that there is a shadow moving in front of your eyes, and you will not succeed in producing it. Then, you can move on to the following experiment. Once you have learned to perceive this shadow, try passing a book vertically. Try different movements and different positions of the book. You will perceive the straight edge of the book. Then try with a circular object, like a large magnifying glass, for example, a plate, or any other circular object will do. After a little bit of practice, you will perceive the circular edge of the object. You will then be able to perceive straight edges and circular edges within the diffuse glow. Naturally, it is even more interesting to ask another person to pass the book in front of you, or to pass their hand in front of you. We have tried this experiment in a cellar in the winter, so at night with perfect conditions of darkness, with children of ages between 10 and 15. Often, children of that age are very sensitive to phosphenic phenomena. We tried this experiment with a box of salt. We would pass the box of salt in front of the eyes of the children in the dark while they were perceiving the diffuse glow. Curiously, the children could perceive the level of salt in the box. We tried this experiment many times and they always got the level right. They could perceive the level of salt as a darker patch within the diffuse glow. So something seems to be taking place, and something that is not suggestion. Of course, it would be very interesting to renew this experiment in a fully equipped scientific laboratory. Phosphenic phenomena truly deserve the attention of the scientific community. Photographies of phosphenes. In my book, The Initiation of Pietro, I have published several photographies of phosphenes. It is not so surprising that photographs of phosphenes can be obtained when you know that it is possible to see physical objects in the dark within the diffuse glow. Here are a few precisions on the way to proceed to produce photographs of phosphenes. I heard about an experiment conducted by Colonel de Rochas in France. He was trying to take pictures of thoughts. He would project a thought, that is, maintain a thought, on a sensitive plate. So I asked a friend of mine, Mr. Kutika in Douai, France, a professional photographer, to try these experiments. He was using plates of at least 400 ASA. He was leaving the plate in its wrapping. He would do a phosphine with a lamp, but he would put a piece of cardboard in front of the lamp with a particular hole in this piece of cardboard so that the shape of the phosphine would be easy to recognize. He would focus on the lamp for a minute, then, in the dark, he would project his phosphine on the plate in front of him. He was performing this not only in the dark, but with the wrapping of the plate left around the plate. He would remain like this until the phosphine disappeared, and then would print the plate for at least 4 hours. This mode of operation is quite similar to taking photographs of cosmic radiations. I also tried this experiment later, and I observed that my phosphine could only be photographed when I was practicing mixing at the same time. Also, it is preferable to practice with the phosphines for roughly 3/4 of an hour before trying to take the picture, so that there is a period when the phosphine is easier to photograph. After that period, it is not possible to photograph it anymore. This rhythm of 3/4 of an hour is found in many aspects of phosphenic training. It seems that for any intellectual or cerebral activity, there is a period of 3/4 of an hour when the activity reaches its peak and then quickly diminishes. We will see this with many details when we study the phenomena of rhythmic thinking. So it is better to practice with the phosphines for 3/4 of an hour before attempting to photograph them, and soon after this period of 3/4 of an hour, it will not be possible to photograph the phosphines anymore. So there is a very short period of time when the phosphine is at its peak for this experiment. An interesting way to proceed would be to ask approximately 12 people to sit at a circular table and all project their phosphine on a sensitive plate in the middle of the table. The chances of getting a photograph of phosphine would be greatly increased. Explanation of the solar prodigy of Fatima, Portugal, by phosphenic telepathy. The facts that we have just mentioned about the diffuse glow explain a lot of the occurrences that took place in the Portuguese village of Fatima in 1917. The solar prodigy took place in front of 70,000 persons and was considered a miracle by the Catholic Church after a trial of 17 years. Here is what happened. The dance of the sun occurred through a long process, as it always happens in nature. The children shepherds had developed the habit of praying while focusing on the sun. They had identified the sun as Jesus and the moon as Mary. Also, they used to practice traditional Portuguese dances that are closely related to the dances of the whirling dervishes, rotational dances. After practicing such dances and prayers, they started to experience visions. For example, they would see a cloud that looks very much like the diffuse glow, appear above the bushes, and sometimes a face would appear in that cloud. The appearance of a white lady. The first important phenomenon that the children experienced was the apparition of an angel. This entirely white being taught them a short prayer. It is made of a positive sentence and a negative sentence and a very precise rhythm. Translated into English, it is something like, "Lord, I thank you for those who love and who pray." The second part is, "I ask forgiveness for those who do not love and who do not pray." They decided to replace their usual long prayer by this short prayer that had been revealed. Their progressive development started. We will go in length about this detail when we study rhythmic thinking. I have mentioned a rhythmophosphenic function of the brain. We are now studying its phosphenic aspect. We shall deal with the rhythmic element later. 1 year and a half approximately after this first apparition, the children had the vision of a character that they called the White Lady. They always refused to say that it was the Virgin Mary. It is only much later that Lucia, the oldest of the children, after spending many years as a nun, started talking about the Virgin Mary. At the time, the children simply said that it was a white lady and that this white lady told them to come back every 13th day of the month for 6 months, and then on the 6th month there would be a great miracle that would convince everyone. It is not surprising that several children could have the same vision at the same time. When we practice mixing in a group, very often several people have the same vision at the same moment. So the practice of phosphenic mixing in a group tends to provide visions. This has nothing to do with hallucinations or suggestions, and if the three children saw together a white lady, it is because they had the habit to pray while focusing on the sun. The apparitions started in 1917. Each month, more people would turn up to witness the events. There was a fierce battle of interpretation of these phenomena by scientists, artists, religious persons, etc. The phosphenic explanation can reconcile everyone. We are not going to deny the spiritual aspect of Fatima, as we believe that the same way human beings can manifest themselves to the fishes of the deep through the medium of a diving suit, there are probably spiritual beings that can only manifest themselves to human beings through the medium of the spiritual substance created by human brains. So, we do not deny that there was a contact with the other world that was achieved at Fatima. Nevertheless, we believe that phosphenism can provide a scientific, physiological explanation of these phenomena, and as such can stand between the religious and anti-religious point of view. On the 13th of October 1917, the famous solar prodigy took place. It was raining that day, and a crowd had gathered to witness the miracle that had been announced. Even the time of the miracle was announced. It was due for midday. There was a crowd of about 70,000 people gathered there. The oldest of the three children, Lucia dos Santos, asked the crowd to close their umbrellas and to kneel. This fact is quite interesting, as a crowd kneeling like this on a wet ground would be very electrically conductive. Phosphenic phenomena seem to be improved by rain. The ionization of the air that is produced seems a phenomenon that favors phosphenic curiosities like the ones we are going to study. Many opponents of the Catholic Church also came to Fatima to witness for themselves the expected lack of miracle. The movements of the solar cophosphine. The miracle was announced for midday, and at 5 past midday, nothing had happened yet. Then suddenly, the rain stopped and the sun started shining. Then, Lucia dos Santos, the older of the three children, said that she perceived the apparition of the white lady again. She turned her hands towards the sun and she perceived luminous rays that were coming out of her hands towards the sun. And so, instinctively, she shouted to the crowd, "Look at the sun." The crowd focused on the sun and saw it darken. If you focus on a strong lamp that's not very far from you, 500 watts or more, you will often have the impression that the center of the lamp becomes dark. Many persons who have focused on the sun have seen its center, or the whole sun, darken. Why is that so? Because the last phase of the post-phosphine is completely black. I have not talked about it yet because we do not really use it. Eye doctors call it the negative phosphine. But when the light is particularly strong, the negative phosphine appears first. It is the final phases of the phosphine, including the negative phosphine, that appear first. What the crowd perceived in Fatima, this darkening of the sun, is the negative phosphine. Then the crowd perceived a trembling on the edge of the sun, as if the edge of the sun was shaking. This phenomenon is very easy to produce if you focus without glasses or contacts, of course, on the setting or the rising sun. You will perceive very often a shaking movement of its edges. It is easy to produce a trembling of the phosphine when the brain is stimulated the right way. Certain fast rhythms or alternating hearing will produce a trembling of the phosphine. The rhythm of this trembling is characteristic. It is always in the region of 1/6 of a second. It is thus this trembling of the phosphine that the crowd has perceived. The cophosphine phosphine that is associated to lighting is superimposed over the light you're focusing on. So if a crowd focuses on the sun, they will perceive the sun, the physical image of the sun, superimposed with the image of their solar cophosphine, the cophosphine produced by the light of the sun. The two images will be superimposed. So the crowd thought they perceived the sunshake when they actually perceived their own cophosphine shaking. Then the crowd saw the sun sway in the sky. Don't imagine that the sun was swaying from one side of the sky to the other. The swaying movement perceived by the crowd was of an amplitude that is approximately the diameter of the sun. Again, through experiments with the double phosphines, that is, doing one phosphine in each eye, we can produce swayings of the phosphines that match the description of the swaying of the sun in Fatima. Again, this sway of the cophosphine is a particular phosphinic rhythm that was triggered and perceived by the crowd. Then the crowd saw the sun whirling on itself. I have built a machine that provokes whirlings of the phosphine. These whirlings of the phosphine are related to what the Hindu call, in terms of yoga, kundalini. And again, it is a rhythmic movement of the phosphine. So all these movements of the solar cophosphine can be reasonably easy produced experimentally, and they all match the movements of the sun that were described by the crowd in Fatima. There were many different witnesses in Fatima. There was a professor of science that was there and that said, "I saw it, but I cannot explain it." There was also the head of an anti-religious newspaper who left convinced that the miracle was genuine. An army lieutenant is supposed to have taken pictures of objects that were not physical, as we know that the phosphines can be photographed. We are not particularly surprised by that claim. Phosphinism and heat phenomena. Another extremely curious occurrence in Fatima was that during all morning it had been raining and the crowd was drenched. The ground was also very muddy. Curiously, just after the prodigy, the ground and the clothes of the crowd became instantly dry. This was so unusual that it seemed miraculous. Nevertheless, the phosphine also has connections with heat phenomena. Let us try an experiment. In the dark, do a phosphine, then project this phosphine on the back of your hand. Make slightly a fist, but do not get too tense. Check if you feel a sensation of heat on your skin. The huge number of people gathered in Fatima would amplify this kind of heat phenomenon in a surprising manner. I believe it is the heat properties of the phosphines that are connected to the apparently miraculous drying of the land and the clothes. The law of the critical mass. The intensity of phosphinic telepathy diminishes with distance. Consequently, the law of physics that governs the critical mass in atomic reactions can be applied to phosphenic telepathy. Let me remind you that if a certain critical mass of plutonium is achieved, there is a nuclear explosion that takes place. Under that threshold of the critical mass, nothing happens. Why is that so? As long as the mass of plutonium is small, when an atom explodes, most of its bits are lost, and there is very little chance that one of these bits hits another atom and makes it explode. But if you are in presence of a larger mass of plutonium, there would be more chance that another atom explodes. From a certain mass, when an atom explodes, it breaks two other atoms, and so on. Two other atoms break four, break eight, and so on. This is the nuclear explosive reaction. We can see that the law of physics that is called the law of all or nothing again comes into play. Under a certain mass, nothing happens. Over a certain mass, there is an explosion. This type of reaction is of course governed by distance. The further the mass of plutonium is away, the further the atoms are away from each other, the less chances there is an explosion. The closer they are, the more chances of an explosion. So with phosphenic phenomena, as the intensity of telepathy diminishes with distance, we can say that as long as enough persons are gathered to practice phosphenic mixing together, there would be a certain critical mass to achieve so that the intensity of the phosphenic phenomena became gigantic. At that moment, there is a sort of phosphenic explosion that is triggered, and which marks history, as in Fatima or during other solar prodigies. One can only imagine what would happen if we would be able to gather such a number of people, or even more, to practice phosphenic mixing together.